is represent a different type of the regular wood of food. And a nutrition point of view, we can see that the mulch is of, you know, different, you know, response to the termites feeding and the habitat that, you know, survive. Well, that's a problem is we're frustrated in how that we can deal with this, you know, technology can develop potentially and treat the, or enhance the, you know, the mulch resistance against the, you know, Formosan termites to survive and as habitat, whatever the traditional, you know, nutrition point of view. The soldiers and raising the center chamber. And as we look at, you know, different times, how termites forage, the number in different, you know, chambers, and we record that, you know, what is going on. And you can see some termites, you know, feeding on the different types of mulch, just like an example here. And let's check out the result, you know, for the termites foraging behavior. You can see this chart is represented different, you know, first phase is by hour, second phase by day. And you can see the, you know, a little bit of change, you know, with the different, you know, mulch type and substrate. And but overall, say you can see that, you know,
Waffles to some others.
I'm going to talk about effects of M-tyrosine on feeding and survival of Formosan termites. As we all know, Formosan subterranean termites, which is called Captotermus formosanus, is an introduced pest in the United States, which is believed to be introduced during World War II from Asia. It's a major wood and structural pest, especially in southern United States, which attack living trees as well as dead and dry woods. Because of large colony size and aggressive feeding behaviors, these Formosan termites have caused great economic damage. And different types of control practices have been used since long time, which include chemical and physical barriers, different types of wood preservatives, and use of termiticides, and lately, the use of baiting systems to eliminate termite colonies have been very popular. Generally, termite foods are rich in cellulose and low in nitrogen content because their primary food material is wood products. Previous experiment done by Chen and Henderson, they found that some of the amino acids like the aspartic acid, glutamic acid, proline, isoleucine, lysine have been found to have increased feeding on termites, and other amino acids like glycine, methionine, leucine, alanine, they had neutral effects on termites feeding. Not only in Captotermus but in Nathamitermes tubiformes also, the addition of dietary amino acids have increased feeding. The amino acid of concern in this experiment is M-tyrosine, which is C9H11NO3 with molecular weight 181.19. The oral LD50 dose in rat is very high, which indicates that its toxicity to mammal is very low, mammalians is very low. It's a white crystal which is soluble in water. Long ago, one experiment done by Aronson and Wilmers found that this M-tyrosine suppressed control. Regarding survival of the or mortality of the termites, we found significantly high mortality. Only 35% survival of the termites was recorded on the filter paper treated with 0.05 molar. And in other doses also, they had some mortality, but the difference was not significant. To further justify this experiment, we conducted choice tests to see whether what the termites will do if they have choice of not feeding on the filter paper treated with M-tyrosine. This test consists of 4 doses of M-tyrosine and water treated control. The experimental arena consists of 80 grams of sand and 10% moisture, and each filter paper is treated with 80 microliter of treatment solutions. Then we introduced 55 termites at the rate of 10% soldiers, and we conducted it in 2 colonies of the termites with 6 replications per colony. And we recorded number of live and dead termites at every 3 days interval and the health of the termites. Then at the end of the experiment, we recorded filter paper consumption and survival or mortality of the termites. Here we found that M-tyrosine treated filter paper consumption was very low. In these two cases, the consumption was almost nil. And in these two cases, still the consumption was very little, and they were all significantly different than the control. However, we didn't record any mortality in choice test. In both no choice and choice test, we noticed that termites were not repelled nor they attracted. And because all the termites were walking equally on the treated filter papers as well as on the untreated filter papers or control, but almost no consumption of the treated filter papers was there. And all doses of M-tyrosine have negative effects on termites feeding, but higher the doses, higher the effect. In no choice test, termites were forced to feed on the filter paper treated with M-tyrosine. So death resulted within 6 days. Means in 6 days, the termites started to die. However, in choice test, termites had option not to feed on the filter paper treated with M-tyrosine. So we didn't record any significant mortality in this choice test. And you can say that this M-tyrosine caused as a stomach poison, but not as a contact poison on Formosan termites. This finding is in consistence with the finding of Weston, who found that M-tyrosine inhibited the growth and development of some of the weedy species in lawn. And he termed it as a potential bioherbicide or green strategy. And with the experiment of Arson and Wormus, who found that this M-tyrosine suppressed the growth and development of bacteria. And probably we can relate it with the protozoans present on the guts of Formosan termites, but actually we didn't do any such experiments to relate this. And to compare these amino acids with other amino acids, for example,
it's a broad spectrum insecticide used in crop protection as well as in urban situations also. And it can be used in quite low dose rates to provide the control that we need in the environment. Some of the qualities of it that make it work as it does, certainly mentioned earlier about the non-repellent nature of the material, the insects can go into those treated zones, interact with those active treatment areas. And then we even get a little bit of horizontal transfer that occurs at many times. It's very good activity by contact as well as by ingestion. And we get some residual natures depending on the environment in which it's put. And the mode of action is a little unique as a GABA blocker. Some of the things that play in the characteristics of long-term persistence is, you know, what is the mobility of the compounds that we're looking at? Are they water-soluble, not water-soluble? How do they bind to the soil? Is there a vapor pressure that we're concerned about that may leave the environment we put it on? And also the half-life itself and how it reacts within the different soil pHs. These are some of the things that can affect persistence of various types of liquid insecticides. If we looked at sorption to soil, that's a very critical part of it. Because when we apply a termiticide to a soil, it can bind to the soil, it can bind to surfaces, it can interact with the plant root zone, it may get into a water profile. These are all the opportunities it may actually interact with and we need to look at. We have some other work ongoing with Texas A&M helping us evaluate some of that too. And we can look at the soil sorption coefficient, and one of that would be like, what's the concentration of the AI that's stuck to the soil, sorbed to the soil, versus that concentration that might be in solution. And we can use that to measure that sorption coefficient. Then we can relate that directly to the organic carbon concentration, and that'll give us another comparison we can do between different active ingredients. And if we look at some of the characteristics of the active ingredients that are available, commercially available materials now, you can see, for instance, bifenthrin has a very high soil binding KOC. It's going to stick hard and not move. Certainly, chlorpenifer, cypermethrin, chlorpyrifos, and the fipronils are all in that way too. And permethrin a little bit less, and imidacloprid a little bit less also. And you can kind of see some of the ranges. Usually greater than 1,000 we consider as being materials that would bind strongly to the soil. Water solubility is another thing we look at. Certainly if it doesn't bind to the soil, but yet it's not water soluble, it still may stay there for quite a long time and then have the binding forces over time, they will accumulate. And really the materials that we use across the board, with possible exception, imidacloprid, we get very low water solubility, and even imidacloprid has a moderate water solubility, but still if it doesn't go into the water solubility itself or doesn't get solubilized, there's less chance of leaching and moving. And the other question is volatility. And really, all the products that we use now across the board have a very low volatility rating, and the chances of them gassing off and going into a non-target arena are quite low. Persistence is the other factor that we want to look at. We want to look at the half-life of these materials. When fipronil was first being evaluated, of course, it's looked at a lot in agricultural situations. And in ag situations, even when they treat the soil and then incorporate it or roll it over, we get half-lives anywhere from 3 to 7 months. And, you know, it depends a little bit on the organic carbon type of soil and how it's incorporated. But there is those persistent half-lives that we see. Now, termite control treatments, that's different. I know a lot of early work with chlorpyrifos, with Durzban. When we dig a trench, incorporate the soil, roll it over, we even get longer half-lives with a lot of our materials that are out there. And, you know, we want to look at some of the material, look at fipronil and see how persistent it is. Also, I would mention it's quite active. Jody had some great work showing the LD50s earlier on that. And of course